Welcome. It is time for Peer Pressure. My guest, plural this week, is every member of the Violators. Violators, an old New Jersey original punk band. There's a few replacements now, and you'll hear them all talk about the good old days and what's ahead. Thanks to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for all the other podcast duties. We are WFMU. Stay tuned. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd like you guys to scoot up to the microphone because we're going to get a crazy echo if you're just
scooting.
Sort of... Sorry, it's not a lounge thing. So, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having us.
And we need to get a little bit of background for you guys.
Okay.
I know you're playing at Bowery Electric on Friday, and it's been a long time coming.
It sure has.
30 years.
There's no good reason for it now, but we really...
Well, good. That answers one of my questions.
Yeah, we just want something to do. We need something to do, and we figured... Power Electric's a good place to do it.
But in terms of, you need something to do, you had to put the band back together, you had to...
It was Jim. He talked me into it. I didn't even want to do it.
Well, so Jim, yeah. Jim is the original bass player in the band,
mm-hmm.
and you seem to be sort of the cataloger or the online voice, a little bit, of the Violators.
Yeah.
And can you tell me about you know, I mean, what year did the band technically break up in?
About 83, I would think.
Right. So it's been 30 years since the breakup of the band, but you have an online, you know, presence. You've got some things. You have the account sort of written, and why go there now?
Why, Jim? Why?
I think there's some unfinished business, more or less. It's the way I always looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
How so?
You know, promising band that kind of self-destructed.
Ended prematurely,
yes. Yeah,
so you can say self-destructed. It's probably a more interesting thing because then I get to say, how did you self-destruct, Jim?
Go on, say, Jim.
Well, you know, just the pressures of trying to make it in the band industry or music industry at the time, you know.
And a lot of drugs, too.
There you go.
Did you really think you could make it at that time? Because that was such an early edge in terms of what was going on in punk, right?
Well, we were offered a contract by Stiff Records.
Okay.
I mean, that was a done deal if we wanted it.
If you took the drugs out of the equation, it probably would have been a lot.
And then there was the A&M.
More doable.
The A&M incident. And
Well, first, we need to get some of the details on the Stiff Records thing. Because you're giving me a lot of juice here. And that is why you're here.
Well... The problem with Stiff at the time was they were kind of trying to sign up as many bands as they could because they were kind of going under, which they did about a year later or so. And then there was Warner Brothers offered us a contract, but it was more like sign us up for $5,000 and put us on a shelf, so we didn't take that. And then there was also the A&M incident.
They came down to Max's Kansas City to see us, and you know they liked it. But afterwards, they came, you know, backstage, and we were all, you know, doing drugs and everything. And they asked if, you know, are you going to be around in 2 weeks, you guys? You know, so they walked out. Which I don't blame them.
So they saw your
extracurricular activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they pretty much. So it was happening. And
and what was your attitude about that when that happened?
When that happened, I was like, you know, get the hell out. Somebody else will sign us. Who needs you? But, yeah, I wasn't, in my right mind. I'm still not in my right mind.
I was going to say, well, you were in the mind that you were in at the time, but, and it was right for the time. It just
it wasn't right at all, but I thought it was right. You know, I was a little delusional. But all that is behind me.
Yes.
I'm drinking water here. That's it. Yeah, so, you know?
And you aren't here to tell the story.
Oh,
yeah, so,
exactly.
So I do want to just go around because I believe the whole band is here, right? So
yes.
Please introduce yourselves, and whoever's not close to a microphone, just scoot up to one when you say who you are.
Okay.
And
I'm Stephen Hador, and I play lead guitar.
I'm Kevin Jellison, and I sing for the band. I'm replacing Mickey Swindle.
All righty.
And I'm Tommy Norton, and I'm replacing my brother on bass, Jim Revenge.
And I'm Gary Taylor, and I'm playing drums.
Wow.
And I'm Jim, and I'm the guitar player as well now.
The new guys are from L.A.
Mm-hmm. Well, from England, but we live in L.A.
Right.
Well, two of the guys are from England.
And they're in a really good band called Drag Strip, which... Mm-hmm. You have one of the tracks
yes,
there.
Yes, when
that
we get to the
play
playlist,
really,
absolutely.
Really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Jim told me about him, you know, and he was, he kept calling me and asking me to play, you know, and I said, I'm not playing. I don't feel like playing. You know, so finally I did, and I saw, you know, how good these guys were, and it sounded really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I changed my mind.
So you were the last one to come on board, and Jim had put a new version of the band together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and, yeah. And I said, all right, I'll try it. You know, if it sounds good, I'll do it. And it did sound good. I was really surprised. And I'm having a good time. We're going to have fun tomorrow night.
All right. I'll
yeah, one of
wow.
our...
Wow.
That is really awesome. Cool. The 45, the original 45, signed by someone.
Do you recognize the phone number?
No. I don't know who signed it, but it's not me.
So for people in Radio Land, cool. I have the Violators 45,
yeah.
And I brought it out, and it's signed by somebody with a phone number, and it looks like it says Violators in New York City, like maybe telling me about a show.
Let's call the number.
I know. Well, it's funny.
Have you ever called
it?
You never called it?
I don't remember. I think I probably did.
Let's call it now.
Because I got that. I was given that at Aldo's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In
Lyndhurst.
In Lyndhurst. Yeah.
Yeah. It burned down,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Did it burn down?
Yeah, I think it did back
okay.
in the day, from what I remember.
Be hilarious, like a Twilight Zone episode, if you actually call that number now and somebody 30 years ago answers, hello.
Yeah. Oh, it's the same.
I've been waiting for your call.
Yeah.
It's cool though.
So
that's. I think that's Rich's handwriting.
Ah.
Speaking of Rich.
Hey, Rich, you.
Yes.
Yes, we need to speak about
speak
Rich.
Of Rich.
Speak of Rich.
Rich is the drummer. He was planning on being here, but he has some medical issues.
Oh, okay.
And that's why we brought Gary was so gracious to play for us with us. Rich is having he's battling some issues with his health, and hopefully he'll be there tomorrow night. And Rich was one of the founding members, or probably the main instigator of the whole band. I mean,
and lyricist, right?
Yes, lyricist, and
yes.
And songwriter, and I mean,
yeah.
So hopefully he'll be there.
The
be there tomorrow night.
Yeah,
we're.
I hope he's feeling well.
Yes.
And then, Tommy, you said that you're here replacing your brother.
Yeah, this guy's, he plays a lot of guitar, too, and he felt more comfortable. He wanted to step out and play guitar, so he asked me if I'd play bass, because playing the bass in a punk rock band is a lot of eighth notes, and it requires a really ridiculous, yeah, I have like a Popeye right arm now.
So I'm not following who it is that you're replacing, though.
I'm replacing him.
My
brother
Jim used to play the bass, but
okay.
Now he feels he wants to play the guitar for some reason.
Sorry, I have
why.
Two different last names for you cookie. Fellas, so I didn't follow that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, well, no, is it, we're
different, he has a different mother.
Yeah, and he's got a different father, so but we grew up together.
Okay. No, it's
so
all good.
So he wants to play the guitar now, but we're going to turn his guitar down.
Oh, weird. Okay. So, Then in terms of what was going on at the time, aside from the fake signings or the deciding to not be signed, right. Just the scene itself, do you have a story like we played Max's. Was Max's, what was it like to play Max's? Like if you just walked through it.
We played Max's 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the scene was great. You know, it was a lot of clubs, you know, around, and there was a lot of bands, and you know, everybody was pretty friendly. You know, it was a really like a, you know, electric time. You know.
Was Max's equipped with gear? Were you bringing all your own stuff in?
Yeah, we brought, you know, our own amps mm-hmm. in, you mm-hmm. know, and everything. But you just felt like when you saw Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers there, you know, standing in the audience, you knew you were at the center of the universe mm-hmm. at that moment. You knew it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I can remember thinking it, you know, saying, I can't believe I'm here where I'm supposed to be, where everybody in the world's supposed to be, but they're not here. I am. And that was great. It was a million clubs, and it was, you know, the Dead Boys, and, you know. Everybody.
Didn't Johnny Thunders play with you guys a few times?
Yeah, you know, he did. He came up on stage and played with the Violators. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was, you know, pretty good friends with him. I mean, he slept over my house in Paterson, New Jersey. Yeah, he was a good guy. He was a really nice guy.
He was a great guy.
Did he live at your house?
No, he slept over one night, though, because he was a little too high to get home. But he was a really normal...
But he came out to Paterson, New Jersey.
Yeah, you know, he was a really normal guy. You know, like, when I met him, he gave me his phone number the first time I met him. And, it was at a gig, a Violators gig. You know, after I came off stage, he was standing there, and I saw Johnny Thunders. I was just like, oh, my God, look at that. My idol. You know, I love him. And I talked to him. He was a really normal, nice guy. And we began a friendship that, you know, went on for a long time. You know, he used to call me on the phone, like, just getting a call from Johnny Thunders on your phone.
Yeah. At home, which is like the wall
you know,
phone.
I loved him. He was a great guy, a normal dude. You know, he didn't act like, oh, I'm Johnny Thunders, you know, mm-hmm. the king of New York.
Were you living alone at the time?
I was living with my girlfriend.
Okay. Because I was just imagining at that period of time, I was still at home with my parents. And I'm just imagining the physicality of Johnny Thunders calling you at home. And I'm like, in that year, I'm like taking the kitchen wall phone and walking around and being like,
with the big curly cord.
Yeah,
exactly. Now I answered the phone, you know, and it was like, Johnny who? You know, I couldn't believe it was Johnny Thunders on it. You know, that was like the first time he called me.
Did you ever talk music or talk about writing anything with him?
He was looking for a guitar player to do something, I don't know, to go to Sweden with or something. And I was supposed to go to a practice. Of course, I got arrested. And he was calling my house and stuff, my girlfriend. But, you know, I was a little incapacitated for a few days, and I was into that. But, you know, I used to get arrested every, you know, 3 months.
So there's a lot of things that you're telling me that could have happened.
Yeah, that could have happened. But, you know, because I wasn't straight and doing the right thing, and, you know, that's the way it usually is. You mess things up.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any thoughts about that now?
Yeah, I wish I didn't do that.
Absolutely.
But, absolutely. You know, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. I'm straight now. I've been straight for 20 years. And, you know, I'm having a much better time now.
And so when you came in here, you handed me a CD.
Right.
Is that a commercially available CD?
No, but okay. They will be available at the show, though.
Okay. And tell me what's on the CD.
There's 4 songs on the CD. The songs that are on the 45 are on there, and 2 unreleased songs.
Okay.
So
I just played one of them.
Yes.
Oh, yes, you did play. You just played one of the unreleased songs, Get Out of My Life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's on there.
Right, so New York Ripper in My Country, which is the 7-inch, that was, you've got, and so you've reproduced the label.
Right.
Almost exactly. And you got the other songs on here, and it looks very genuine.
Oh, yeah.
Like the new track thing.
Yeah, so, no, I try.
And Syringe Songs.
Yes, that's part of the old days.
Mm-hmm, you know, that was the label. I thought that was bold.
But I kept it on there just for nostalgia's sake.
Mm-hmm. And how many releases were out on Syringe Songs?
Just this 45. We never released those other two songs. Mm-hmm.
So that was the band's, you know, name of a label, and you just put out your own record.
Right.
So what was that like for you at that time? Because that was really just, as much as you say, and you know, and all, and I mean, now we can laugh at sort of like the failures and the and the unchosen opportunities. However, you put out your own record, and I know from my own experience, I mean, that's actually a lot of work.
Right, but like, that was the way everybody did it at the time. It was like, you know, do it yourself. I mean, we had one, the Blessed had their own.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people did.
You guys pretty much invented DIY.
Yeah.
Well, we were in the beginning of it, you know. Yeah. But, you know, that's what everybody did back then.
Yeah, that
and then you went to Bleecker Bob's and you went to all the other stores and you gave them 25 records. You know, they bought them off you and they sold them. And then you went back the next week and you kept, you know, until you ran out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what you did. You know, you went everywhere and, you know, you sold your own records, you know, and that's what they did back then. I don't know if they still do that now. Who knows?
They put it in the cloud now.
Yeah, but it's come totally full circle now, the whole music industry. Sorry, it's come totally full circle now. I mean, because now new bands do the whole DIY thing and think that they're inventing it. And when it was actually you guys back then.
Yeah. But I do just want to point to that really is very early, you know, and you guys were one of the first ones, especially in this area, because you're kind of predated. I mean, you know, to me, it's like... sorry, I need to look at the songs. Like My Country is like an oi hit, right? Except that it was released in New Jersey in 1980.
Yeah.
Like, so...
Yeah, we recorded it in, like, 79. I think it was, like, the end of 79.
No, it was the beginning of 80.
It was in the beginning of 80. I stand corrected.
Okay. but even though...
We were playing it in 79.
Oh, okay. And then it got recorded. Yeah, well, there's always that gap.
We were
one
of the first to make our own record, but, you know, we weren't the first ones, though. It was a bunch of people doing it back then.
Considering you didn't, I mean, you know, it's funny, though, because you did manage to put out your own record, your own 45, and I don't even know if it's, like, rare. Does it go for, like, tons of money on eBay and stuff?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
How much have you seen it for?
Well, I've sold a bunch myself, I must say. But, you know, it goes for like $200 up to, you know, $800 if you have the spray paint sleeve on it, like the one on that CD there.
How many were pressed originally?
500.
500. So how many did you actually get out there at the time?
A lot. I wish I had a lot more so I could put them on eBay, but I don't. I only had four, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we sold most of them at, you know, the record stores.
So but, at the know, time, I, you did yeah. sell them then.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for $2.
Right, sure.
The stores bought them for a dollar.
Right.
And yeah.
They would sell them for two.
And that's what they went for, $2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish I had a case of them.
They were playing them in the Bay Area, too, Maximum Rock and Roll. We were like number... On the first time we hit their chart, we were like number two or three.
Yeah, Bomp was distributing them out in California, too.
Mm-hmm.
So they sold out pretty quickly, and we didn't have the cash to make more because we were spending it all on drugs. So
and Jello wanted a couple copies. I think they were gonna. He was thinking about it for Alternative Tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of cool.
And that's that.
Indeed. And now you're back, and now it's 2013.
Yes.
And how long is your set? I don't want to just spoil it.
I don't know, like 45 minutes or something like that. It's not real long.
Okay. So, and are you writing new music?
We can at a drop of a hat, actually.
Well, but you have a gig tomorrow, so I'm guessing you're not going to write something today for tomorrow.
It was hard enough to remember
the original
songs.
Some of those songs seem new to me because I forgot. So, to me, I am playing new music. But
we're open to the possibility. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we'll see how it goes.
Direction, exactly.
So everything that you're playing tomorrow is all throwback stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Well, you are here to be guest DJs. And I'll show you your playlist here.
Okay.
What do you want to What do you want to start off with?
Do we have any of the smithereens on there?
No, I didn't put any smithereens on there. I couldn't think of it. Let's start off with another New Jersey band, Electric Frankenstein, who's a real good band, and they're friends of mine, too.
All righty. So,
and the song is Annie's Grave. It's about a place in Totowa, Heartbeat Road. That's what it's about.
We are New Jersey.
Yes. Very good. It's a great song, and it's a great band, Electric Frankenstein.
Okie doke. So my guests are the Violators. Their first song in their Peer Pressure set is Annie's Grave by Electric Frankenstein. We're WFMU. Stay tuned.
Keep
And we have returned. My guests, I have to get used to saying the plural bit there, are the, that's not right, the violators. Sorry. Too many things to do, the computer, etc. So, we just heard a set of music. Please tell me about why you played what you played. That last one, Degeneration, waiting for the next big parade.
Yeah, because Degeneration is a great band, and that's a great song.
Yes, Howie, they are.
Howie Pyro is in Degeneration. He's a friend of mine. I just saw him, I don't know, 2 days ago. He had an event at the Bowery Electric.
What was that event?
It was a bunch of old, like, flyers from bands. You know, he collects all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was displaying them. They were really cool to see. And I played his band. And
were there musical guests at the Bowery? Or was it
well,
just
Well, L.A. Guns was playing downstairs, but it wasn't a part of that event, though.
Oh, so he had an exhibit upstairs.
Yeah, upstairs.
Got
yeah.
it. Okay, mm-hmm. cool.
And then we heard Electric Frankenstein.
The Smithereens in between the two.
And the Smithereens. You know, an old friend of the band. We used to do a lot of gigs with the Smithereens early on.
That sounds so odd.
Yeah, it does
because
sound odd.
I mean, in terms of, you know, genre and what you think of when you think of the Smithereens.
But we were very friendly with them, and they're very nice guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got along well. You know, Pat's a great guy. And we just, you know, used to book a lot of gigs, you mm-hmm. know, together.
Yeah. Mike Massaro is the original bass player for the Smithereens. He used to be in a band with Rich, our drummer. And then...
What was the band?
Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And also Bobby Steele was in that band as well.
Bobby Steele was in Paradox?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And then Bobby left to join the Misfits,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of broke up the band. And then Mike went and started playing with the Smithereens, and Rich formed the Violators.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a little interesting history
there. Mm-hmm. And then you guys, were you sort of at the same level in terms of just getting your music out there? And
yeah, when the Smithereens first started playing, we kind of piggybacked off each other. You know, we would get a show and we'd tell the club owner, hey, you know, we know this great band called the Smithereens, you know, we really want them to play with us. And they the club owners would say okay, and vice versa with the Smithereens. It was really nice because both bands were totally different, so it wasn't like you were getting hammered with the same kind of music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we loved the Smithereens back in the day. I mean, they were a great band. I mean, and
they still are.
It proved out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and then at that time, were you really bringing in two different sets of fans because
yes,
your music
we were.
Was different? You were. So that actually really worked well for you then.
Yeah, it was cool.
Were there clubs that you got into because of the Smithereens that you normally might not have been able to get booked at, do you think?
Well, I think maybe one club or so. I know that they tried to get us into either Kenny's Castaways or one of the clubs that they were playing in, and the owner came, and it was just like, you know, they're a good band, but they're too volatile for me to put them in my club because, you know, I like my gear.
Yeah.
Sorry, boys, you're just too darn loud.
Yeah.
It wasn't that we were loud. I mean, we were
loud, Dan. We still are.
Yeah. We were literally juvenile delinquent, so that mm-hmm. was part of the problem.
And you had developed a reputation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, it's like your own dirty secret, and then sometimes it's like everybody knows.
Everybody knew. They were trying to keep the riffraff out.
Yeah.
Even if the riffraff is an entire band.
I mean, well, exactly. You know, case in point, you know, the one gig at Max's that we did, I think it was when we played with Legionnaire's Disease. I mean, our fans literally took all the furniture at Max's and put it in a pile, and they shut the show down. And said, you know, you guys can't do it if you know, everyone put the tables back and said, okay, we won't do it again. And then we play halfway into the next song or second song after they let us start playing again, there was the big pile of furniture.
That was pretty common at Max's, though, at that time.
Because they did have the seats all the way up to the stage.
Yeah, they would turn them over or move them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. But so that was the act, though, of your fans. That wasn't actually what you were doing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. But then, there was
we would egg them on, though.
Yeah, we would. We would. And sometimes...
Oh, well, now the truth comes out.
And some of the live recordings that we're listening to now, sometimes, the guitar will drop out or the bass will drop out or the singer will drop out, and it's probably because of audience participation, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Getting mm-hmm. into, I guess that was, in L.A. that was happening a lot, but... In New York, it didn't happen too often.
You were an opportunity-seeking band.
Yes.
Moment by moment by moment.
Exactly.
Didn't matter if you were on stage.
No, I mean, if something happened, you just,
I'll be back in a minute.
It took care of business. Whatever that business might be. I mm-hmm. mean, your girlfriend or wants, mm-hmm. something or whatever.
And then starting off that set was Annie's Grave by Electric Frankenstein, which we did sort of mention. ahead of time. So do you have any stories or any real memories of, whether it's playing at Max's or just something from that time that could not happen now?
Hmm.
I mean, whether it's in music.
Memories. I barely have any memories at all. Jim probably remembers.
Boy. There was probably a lot of stuff that, I don't frequent the clubs anymore, so I don't know what goes on. So I really can't say.
But I don't think there's as many clubs as there were back then. I mean, there was Botany, One Under, Club X.
A7.
A and 7th was a great place. We used to play there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Max's, CB's. There
was
so many clubs. You got a memory?
Yeah.
Hit it.
Jim used to have a really nice dress back then, which you can definitely not get into anymore.
No, I can't.
You're talking about that picture from Two Tone in the
same exactly.
Jim in a dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is that picture? We need that picture.
It's online.
We should have brought that picture.
No, I didn't see it. I actually did snag a couple pictures.
Yeah, no, that was cool.
If you go in Google and put in Jim Revenge
2-2. Yeah, you can find it online.
Really?
You can find it on my Facebook page, as a matter of fact.
Actually, I looked at your Facebook page. I stole a couple things from it. I've got the A7 flyer up.
Okay.
And then the photo that Rich Campbell.
That's what it's there for, to steal, because I steal from everybody.
Well, it's up on the playlist now.
Yeah, it's cool.
Mm-hmm. And... did you want to give away a pair of tickets to the show tomorrow?
Absolutely.
We can do that.
Definitely.
And so when we break for our next set of music, and I do want you to tell me what you want to get to next, the number here is 201-200-9368. Who else is on the bill tomorrow?
Outer National,
mm-hmm.
The Sharp Boys or something like that. It was another band, but it got changed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's see if you can hear me typing. Let's see what we got going on here. For tomorrow.
It was Dead Tricks we were supposed to play, but I think they're going to do the Joey Ramone benefit. So now they got...
Outer National is playing.
And the Sharp Lads.
The Sharp Lads.
Both of those bands actually sound really good. So I think it's going to be a great show.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I want to do, because I didn't have to, but I started off my show today with a long Slayer set because the guitar player from Slayer just died.
Mm-hmm.
So I only got to play one song, so I think I'd like to play New York Ripper, and then we'll go into some of your playlist also.
Okay, sounds
how
good.
Is that? All right, so what about New York Ripper? Tell me about the song. How it was written, what's the story behind it?
Well, that's really like a New York Post headline back in, the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
79.
They have the best headlines to post.
Yeah, right. They still do.
I know. They're great. There was some guy running around killing girls, and you know that was like the headline, the New York Ripper.
Yeah, there were girls were being found dismembered in dumpsters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the inspiration for that song came from.
Yeah, well, we were delinquents.
Yeah, you know,
from the New York Post.
Right. All right. So my guests are the Violators from New Jersey, and it sounds so funny to say from New Jersey, but you were far ahead of the Oi Violators. Hey,
there's nothing wrong with New Jersey. New Jersey's all right.
I know. I got, you know, in the house here, WFMU.
It's okay.
And we're going to play New York Ripper, which is really their single from what year did it come out?
1980.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
The sun. remain the same. Yeah.
And we have returned. My special guests today are the Violators. And so what's the deal with this drag strip song?
Yeah, what's the deal with that drag strip
well,
song?
Well, I believe that some of the members... I'll tell you, Steve. So some of the people in this room are members of drag strip also. And so I want to know the connection and how that happened and how recent is this
well,
song?
They're helping us out well, with this gig. Go ahead.
Well, this
Gary.
This is Gary.
Yeah.
This is the first time Gary has spoken.
Yeah. Well, drag strip's my bad.
Okay.
But the whole concept with drag strip, that album we did about a year ago, mm-hmm. but it was very much like it's 70s hard rock, you know, where it came from. Mm-hmm. So when the Violators came along and asked us, they were like, well, you know, is it going to be that? But we just have such a long history of playing punk rock and playing, you know, mixing the two things together. So it was just a natural thing for us to do when Jim asked us and Steve asked us to do it, you know, as well as Tommy obviously being Jim's brother, you know. But it was essential for us once originally it was Kevin, then it was Tommy, and then I came in. And so that's how it ended up being Drag Strip. It wasn't really planned, you know.
www.dragstripband.com www.dragstripband.com
good.
All right.
Good,
shameless.
Good. That's all right. That's
and
all right.
The song was We're actually good. About Marley and my mom.
About what?
His mother.
About my mom.
Oh.
Thanks for the memories.
Oh. I see. So then how did the two groups of you meet?
It was Jim's fault.
Jim, yeah. Through yeah. Jim, yeah.
I have a funny story about this.
Please.
This is Tommy. I used to be in my bedroom, and it'd be
keep
a
it
summer
clean.
Night. Oh, totally. Yeah, no. I mean, I was like literally 8 years old or 7 years old, and I'd open the window and stick my head out and listen to these guys rehearse, because mm-hmm. they'd be rehearsing in the garage next to the house.
And so it's, yeah, I've been a huge fan ever since, so I'm very pleased to be here.
And a lot of the guys that we were talking about earlier, I played with a lot of the guys from the New York scene.
Mm-hmm.
I was with a band called Shotgun Rationale with Sonny Vincent.
Oh, wow.
And we did, like, you know, Cheetah Chrome played on records, Richard Hell,
mm-hmm.
Mo Tucker, mm-hmm. Bob Stinson,
oh.
Greg Norton from Husker Du.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a long history of the whole, where the Violators come from musically, you know.
Right.
So it was also very natural for me to come on board when they asked me to, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what other bands have you played in, Gary?
With Shotgun Rationale, we did about 5 albums here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a band called Tank with Algie Ward.
My God, you were in Tank?
Yes, I was.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, I was a drummer in Tank.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I am completely losing my mind right here. Oh, are you kidding?
No.
It's totally for real. We've had to hear about this for 20 years. Oh.
Tank is like the best metal band ever. Ever. Yeah. Absolutely ever.
You just made Gary's day.
I can't.
I think she's having spasms.
Oh. Wow. I can't. Yeah. Tank is, I mean.
You've got to come to this show then. Come on.
You know, when I was talking to Steve about bringing these guys in, I said, look, I'm bringing in some ringers from L.A.
You're not kidding.
Oh, yeah.
So my experience of Tank is that Tank was really, you know, kind of like a Motorhead kind of band, like with the punk and with the metal, but way serious because Algie Ward is in the band.
Well, we actually played in New York.
You're in Tank.
Well, we actually played CBGB's here with Tank.
Yeah, I saw.
And we did Studio 54 here too.
I saw those shows. I have my Tank T-shirt.
I was the drummer there.
Oh my God.
But the thing is, though, it always had a punk crossover because of Algie.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It was, you know, even though Tank were like Motorhead, really, we had the same record company, the same manager,
mm-hmm.
the same everything.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Was,
this means war. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm completely like, you know, really. Wow.
That's it. I'm getting mad. Now.
All right, let's get back to the Violators.
Yes, exactly.
I'm leaving.
You and that T words.
Wow. That's so great. I just had to ask. So, has anybody else, have you guys been in any other bands that I need to freak out about?
I've played with important people too.
Well, let's hear it. This is what I want to hear about you.
This is Tommy. I was in a band with Corey Clark from Warrior Soul called Space Age Playboys.
Oh, I know that name.
And he played on the last Warrior Soul album.
Very good.
And what they're forgetting to mention is actually Gary, Tommy, and myself, Kevin,
mm-hmm.
were in a punk band called the Deadbirds. And that's how we all got to know each other.
That's true.
Okay. Well, that's the important stuff. That's, you know, the whole stream of, you know, connecting and all that. And that's why we're all here now. Yes, Tommy, speak.
www.deadbirds.com.
Do you have a Deadbirds website?
Yeah.
and the Facebook page for the Violators, is that the only thing that's out there?
Well, we have a website. Violators.us, I think.
Oh, let me check.
I don't have anything to do with that.
He's pissed off as a tag.
That's it, I'm mad.
Oh, you're right.
No, I'm really kidding.
And I never saw this. Okay, cool. Violators.us.
It's a site that was started but never finished.
Well, you don't finish sites. Yes, you just update them. Oh, right.
Yeah, the Facebook page is really the main Violator site.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a lot of great pictures on here. Wow, cool.
Is the dress on there?
But none with me in a dress, because I put that.
I don't see any dress pictures.
Now, that's on the Facebook Violators page, has him with the dress.
Oh, I looked on your
page. If it doesn't, it will later.
I got to look at that Facebook page.
Yeah.
No, I'm just looking at the comments board, and there's all these Tank comments now. Sorry, but it was a great radio moment. That was really wow. And are you going to be bringing anybody out, like any special performance or special appearances on stage, anything like that?
We've invited some people, but we're not sure if they're going to show up or not.
Okay,
it's heavily rumored.
Heavily rumored.
So it is the place to be. And I do want to mention that that Rich Wretch did call in. He can't be here, but he did call in and wanted to be part of the hoopla as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. And let's see. So before Drag Strip, was there anything else that we wanted to talk about that the Drag Strip song?
Or do you want to get back right back to Tank?
Listen, you want to give me a hard time? I got all the buttons here. I'll just sit there and be me and Gary just talking.
But, you know, I really liked Algie Ward as a bass player. I mean, he was in The Saints, and then he was in The Damned.
Yeah, of course.
His work in The Saints was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk about, like, influence, because you were a bass player in The Violators. Who were you listening to?
Bass player-wise, I was listening to... my favorite back in those days would be Dee Dee, and also Ron Ashton. I thought he was probably the greatest, personally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Steve, anybody for you guitar-wise?
Sure. Johnny Thunders, of course, and the New York Dolls.
Not just because Johnny Thunders stayed over your house.
No, of course not. Nah, you know, Johnny Thunders is a great guitar player. Mm-hmm. And now all the old blues stuff I like. That's basically it.
When did you first pick up the guitar?
At 12.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what was going on at 12? Like, what were you copying at that point?
At 12, I had a Mel Bay, guitar book, and I was learning how to play Cantown Races and stuff.
Nice.
But, you know, eventually I got into Led Zeppelin, and, I started to read, like, a Guitar Player magazine and see who these, you know, my idols were influenced by, and I bought the old blues stuff, and I learned how to play that, and that led to other things.
And now leading up to the show tomorrow and the reunion and all that, was there a gap where you were not playing music at all?
Well, I've always been playing the guitar, you know, in my room, but that's about it. But, you know, I haven't played with a band in 20 years.
Cool. So this is going to be really exciting for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
You know, I do a couple things, you know, here and there. Tommy Kaye from Clifton, me and him were jamming for a while. Mm-hmm. And Spikey.
From Chaos.
From US Chaos. But, you know, I haven't played out anywhere.
But you never dropped the guitar?
No.
Cool. And Kevin, any influence for, you know, anybody you modeled yourself after in terms of being a vocalist? Uh-oh, he's taking, look at that. I'm looking at a tattoo. It doesn't really translate over radio. Can you just sort of explain that?
It's
Mark Bolan tattoo.
He's my god, he's my guru.
Wow.
I grew up with all the English glam stuff, so it was T-Rex, David Bowie, The Sweet, Slade, Gary Glitter, even though we don't like to mention him anymore. But that was my influence, yeah. I loved all the early glam stuff, and then that moved into the punk stuff, so that was like The Pistols, The Clash, Stiff Little Fingers, Penetration, X-Ray Specs.
Mm-hmm. And up to what age did you live in England, or up to what year did you live in England?
Well, I'm 29 now, so I've been here 23 years. So I left England when I was 6. And that's all you're getting.
I was going to ask you about shows, about what bands did you get to see?
Oh, back in the day? Never got to see Mark Bolan. Mud, Sweet, Gary Glitter.
Wow.
Alvin Stardust was one of the first. Wow. But I actually, funnily enough, went to see Motorhead when I was a little younger than now, and the bill was Motorhead, Triumph, Trust, and Tank.
Nice.
So years before I ever met Gary, I actually saw him on stage.
Foreshadowing.
What does that mean?
Foreshadowing. It's like...
Yeah, it's amazing, you know?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It's one big circle.
It really is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you saw Sweet.
Yeah.
That's cool.
One of the greatest bands of all time, the Sweet. Absolutely.
What did you say, Jim?
One of the greatest bands of all time.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a band I never got to see. So, Tommy.
Yes.
Influences?
The Violators, www.violators.us.com.
Very good.
Now, all the same, I was a huge Johnny Thunders fan, Cheetah Chrome guy. My brother turned me on to music from the time I was walking.
It was, this is Black Sabbath, boy. This is the Dead Boys. Come on, you know. So, yeah, all the same stuff.
But. Was there any particular guitar style or anybody, like when you started playing, what were you, you know? Because it's hard to recreate things like, you know, oh, I'm going to pick up a guitar and I want to play like Tony Iommi. Not, you know, so what do you, like, what's anything rudimentary or anything, you know?
Randy Rhodes until I got to be about 23, broke my hand, and then just went totally thunders from there on out. Mm. So,
yeah. Mm. Neat. And then, Gary, for you, any drum?
Well, obviously John Bonham.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, I was more from the classic rock, you know, Who, Zeppelin, you know, Deep Purple, Thin Lizzy.
Those are all my favorite drummers right there.
Well, those are my favorite drummers. John Bonham, Ian Paice, you know. So that's pretty much where I was, you know, where I come from as far as influence goes. Yeah.
And then, so we're talking about, and how long did you stay in England for?
Oh, I was in England. I've been in America about 25 years, but I was in England, I don't know, till like 88, probably. Yeah.
And so what was your, like, did you see Led Zeppelin?
Yes.
There?
I saw Led Zeppelin's last gig at Nebworth right before John Bonham died.
Wow.
Yeah. I was actually there. And I saw The Who with Keith Moon, which is, you know, pretty amazing.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but more from that old school style of big rock. You know, which is where Dragstrip influence comes from.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, like, do you put your kit together mimicking any of
kit's very punk rock, actually.
Oh, okay.
I kind of, as I've gotten older, the less I have to carry around, the better. Mm-hmm. So I've got a vintage Ludwig kit, but I literally just play bass, drum, and floor and snare. No toms. One cymbal, and that's it.
One cymbal?
Yeah.
Hi-hat?
Well, hi-hat and one crash cymbal.
Okay.
But just...
You can say it all.
I like
with
it
that.
More rock and roll. It's more basic.
Yeah.
You know.
What was your kit? Sorry, guys. What was your kit in Tank?
It was a double bass drum Yamaha kit.
Okay. Yeah. I could, for sure. I got it.
But I've moved away from the carrying all that shit around, all that stuff around.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then Jim, for who were you picking out as an influence for bass?
Well,
back in the day,
you know, D.D. Ramone. He was easy to learn how to play. I mean, when I joined the Violators, I literally was the first time I had to learn a song from beginning to end. I mean, I've been noodling around since I was a little kid, but I never had the patience to learn a song. So, but the Violators, you know, I would make up my own stuff, but you know, but when I got in the Violators, I had to learn how to play to get the bass.
Well, and sometimes it takes the experience of getting into a band to actually be able to sort of hold it together. And what was it like? I mean, you know, you guys sort of started off by telling me all about this, you know, the crazy dispositions of all you guys. So what was rehearsal like? You know, I mean, how...
A lot of fun.
you know, that's a good question.
Did you get down to business? Or
It was pretty serious, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. But we never rehearsed. I mean, but when we rehearsed, it was really intense.
So it was an event.
Yes. I mean, when we did the 45, we probably had three to five gigs under our belt and probably about the same amount of rehearsals. And we went in and did that 40, the recordings, yeah. So it was interesting. I mean, we were all super intense and very focused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it...
It just depended on what?
Right, and we, you know, we didn't. How do I say this? We, you know, if you couldn't play, you know, you were chastised. If you couldn't sing, you couldn't play. Right, you were chastised, and you know, and if you couldn't, I mean, the next time that you played either out or rehearsed, if you couldn't hang, you were gone.
Mm-hmm. It's not like we didn't care, you know, how the stuff sound. There wasn't that punk rock where, you know, we just didn't care. We actually knew how to play our instruments, and I was dead serious about it myself.
Well, and that is sort of the fallacy about, like, the whole...
Yes, he is.
That's sort of the fallacy about the punk scene. People couldn't play. It's like, well, people might not have been able to play to begin with, and, you know, and that made it comfortable to form bands, but then people really did want to say something and did, you know, I mean... got better, and that sort of wasn't...
You know, a lot of guys really did know how to play. It just, you know, that's all the media nonsense. But, you know, the guys that didn't know how to play, you know, like, they're not around anymore, really, you know, but...
Oh, and Steve, it's time for your bumper.
My bumper?
Sticker.
No.
Okay. Well, this is Steve Hadorn from The Violators, and you're listening to WFMU.
And that is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Bingo. Thank you, sir. So in that set before Dragstrip, we heard from the Woggles.
Yes.
Why was Woggles in your list? Great band.
I just like them. They're really raw, and you know, they sound like the old Kinks. Mm-hmm. And they're good.
Mm-hmm. And then previous to that, the New York Dolls with Bad Girl.
Wow. Yeah. What can you say about the Dolls?
I'd like you to say something about the Dolls.
Well, that version that you played, that was... I don't know what that was. That was like a Mercer Street session version, maybe. It wasn't the studio version, but, you know, the Dolls are just... I think the Dolls are the best band ever, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. that's, you know, how I put the Dolls.
And is that in, like, the whole package?
In the whole
is that
world.
Because of, you know, the... I mean, obviously because of Thunders, but...
No, it's not just Thunders. It's
right.
The whole thing, the whole attitude, the music, the... what the songs are about. It's just, it wraps up everything in a bow for me, and it mm-hmm. did from the first time I heard it.
Mm.
And it still does today. The Dolls are it.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. So shall we get into the next set of music?
Yes.
What would you like to play?
Let's go with the Stimulators, Loud, Fast Rules on WFMU.
Great band.
And I do have to mention that Denise and Nick of the Stimulators are going to be my guests on the 23rd.
Cool.
Yes.
Very cool.
Right, Harley, yes. Great band. Patrick.
Yeah, I remember Harley when he was 12.
Yeah.
He was playing the drums.
Exactly. Alrighty, so my guests are the Stimulators. No, not the Stimulators. The Violators. We're going to play the Stimulators. I'm getting ready for 2 weeks from now.
My guess is Tank.
And the Violators have the musical reins today. We're going to hear some Stimulators next, and please stay tuned.
We'll be right back.
Okay, so let's talk about that set. I'm here with the Violators, who are playing at the Bowery Electric tomorrow, along with Outer National and the Sharp Lads. And Ramones, okay, I know that nothing needs to be said. However, I'd like you to say why you chose that song.
Why did I choose that song?
There are five people in this room besides myself.
I just like the song. It's about sniffing glue. It's about having something to do. So, simple as that. I'm very simple-minded. I'm a very simple man.
That's a walk down memory lane?
Yes.
Is that the sniffing glue part?
Exactly.
She's sassy.
And what else do we play?
The Dead Boys.
Ah, the Dead Boys.
Our man Cheetah.
Yes. Cheetah Chrome, Stiv Bators. It's just a nice raw song, something to wake you up in the afternoon.
Were you guys ever on bills with the Dead Boys?
Yes, we were. Well, we were with Cheetah Chrome when he left the Dead Boys. We played with him.
I don't remember what the name of the band was.
I don't know either. It's Casualties?
Not sure.
Yeah.
But he's a good guy. Cheetah was a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cheetah's still doing plenty of things. He's got that... what is it? He's got a band with Sylvain.
Batusis.
The Batusis.
I actually have a credit on that record. Thank you very much.
You do. What is the credit for, Tommy?
I'd rather not say.
Why did you bring it up?
Oh.
Because they mentioned it.
Spit it out.
No, I just have it. They thanked me on that record.
Oh, okay. Well, you can make up something.
Yeah. It was, okay, so
just lie.
It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and they needed a guitar at the studio, so I went down to SIR and got them a guitar.
Nice. Okay. All right. Very, very helpful. And Cheetah is a friend of WFMU. He's been on here a couple times.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Cool.
Yes. And
then we heard the Stimulators, Loud, Fast Rules. The Stimulators, we did some early gigs when we first came to New York. Like, when we first formed, we did some gigs with the Stimulators, and we remained friends with Harley. He used to DJ at a lot of our gigs, you know, and I just liked the Stimulators, you know, they were always great.
Yeah, yeah. Club X, the Club X days, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in there, too, you had Wayne County and the Electric Chairs.
Love Wayne. I was, you know, friends with Wayne back in the, you know, the old days. I used to go see him all the time. And
did you go to the Max's reunion last year?
No, I didn't
last
go.
May? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, Wayne. Jane played. Yeah. And it was actually really, really awesome.
We actually were invited to play there, but we couldn't at the Max's reunion.
Mm-hmm.
We were?
Yeah.
That's why you couldn't.
You said you didn't want to do
it. Well, I probably said no.
Yeah.
Well, I have business. I have business obligations. Okay. So there's no way I could do it.
All right.
And so that and that was pretty much the Wayne County was mostly the Max's scene.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Pretty much. That's where I saw Wayne.
Yeah. Yeah. There
most
was
of the time back then.
Yeah, back in the day, there was like Max's bands and CB's bands.
Yeah, there were. That's what that's what I was sort of getting towards, because
yeah.
And I don't really know why, but there were bands who really just played at CB's and really bands that just played at Max's.
I think it had to do with the people that were booking the gigs back in the day. Mm-hmm. There was some gal that was booking the gigs for CB's, and I forgot. She had a boyfriend, and their band who played her all the time. Then we had Peter at Max's, and you know, he apparently liked us. And
I don't know. Whenever we played at CB's, you know, we couldn't get anybody to go down there for some reason. But when we played at Max's, the place would be packed, so we didn't play at CB's that much.
Well, it might have had to do with the bathroom situation there.
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody wanted to go down there at that
at the
that
CB's
point.
Bathroom.
Well, not for us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I could imagine that the bathroom wasn't as bad as it really got to be.
It was really bad.
But I mean, but I do remember. I mean, I remember CB's in the '70s, right? And you could still see the big posters on the walls, the cowboy, and all that other stuff. And eventually, like, everything just got covered in, you know, graffiti and stickers and all that. And
really,
And yeah, I mean,
that's crazy.
Well, but it's just, it's just a span of time, and it's an active club. So, and I know the condition of the bathroom, but I don't really remember it. I remember that there were doors in the '70s, you know, which is,
the whole place smelled like a bathroom in
the '80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I don't fully remember that. And I guess I'm just wondering at one point, you know, where you drew the line and said, oh, I'm going to CB's, I better go to the bathroom now.
I got a big splinter in my foot at CB's one time on stage.
Why were you not wearing shoes? Did you not wear shoes?
Yeah, I had Converse on with a hole in the bottom. I didn't have any socks on. And I was, and a big splinter in my foot. Was like, what a jolt that was. Made me feel alive.
Well, and then I'm just, you know, Max's may have had more built-in audience, too. I mean, it could have had the upstairs and the downstairs and that kind of thing, so maybe people would just sort of show up. And I know as a kid, I heard of Max's before I heard of CB's, and I went to Max's absolutely not knowing what was going on, and just to show up because it's cool. Let's go to this cool place called Max's Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that it had a little bit more of that. So,
but everybody went to A and 7th, though, and, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know why, but we couldn't really draw anybody at CB's. I can't explain it. I don't know.
I don't think
so we just stopped playing there.
We didn't play there enough. I mean, you know, it was really hard to get a gig there for us, so we didn't really play there. But Peter would always, I'd call him and he said, okay, here you got this date, and that was it. You know, it was But A7, yeah, that was a cool club.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, and
place.
How was, so when you talk about the booking there, how was the booking at A7?
Well, the.
Was it like a show up booking or was it actually?
No. No, and the guy that was doing the bookings there, manager, he actually, you know, he would ask me, well, you know, I got this band from D.C. coming up. Are they any good? I go, what's their name? Like, well, Minor Threat. They want to be on your bill. I said, yeah, fine. I mean, there was a lot of bands that were like that back then.
Mm-hmm. Pure Hell. We used to play with Pure Hell a lot. They were nice guys.
Shout out to Lenny and Pure Hell.
Yeah. They were good guys. Mm-hmm. I like those. And the guys from the Bad Brains, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We actually, back in the day, the other guitar player, Steve, and I were working with Lenny, the bass player from Pure Hell. We were kind of flirting with a band, and that band eventually turned into Butch Lust and the Hypocrites.
Oh, okay.
And actually, Screaming Mad Georgia,
the Mad,
we wanted him to be the singer, but he wound up playing the bass. And then Steve and I were out of the picture at that point. But that's kind of how that whole band started. It was a lot of fun. Lenny is an amazing human being. He was absolute gem of a person. Yeah. And the whole band were way ahead of their time. I heard some stuff that they did when they were trying to get re-signed, and it was revolutionary. I mean, those guys were 10, 15 years ahead of their time with the new stuff that they were putting out. And it's a shame that no one's ever really heard it, because it's extraordinarily good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, Pure Hell played on FMU probably 2 years ago, maybe. They were up here, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great, good guys.
Great guys. Great guitar player, great bass player.
And they're kind of centered in Philly now, right?
Yeah, they're back down in Philly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And any other recollections or any other bands that you were on bills with that were either unusual or just, you know?
Well,
I can't think at the moment.
There was Legionnaires' Disease. Which
they were pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask you about them because they were a band that was really sort of...
They were nuts.
Yeah, the singer apparently had a prosthetic leg, and he'd get out in the middle of the tables at Max's and he'd pull off his leg and start swinging it around and hopping on one leg. I mean, they were great. they were a great band. They were.
Yeah. Yeah, not a lot of output from them.
No,
But still unusual for a Texas band to get up here.
And the other Steve, the other guitar player, he actually played with them, I think, one show.
Hmm.
While they were in New York, they tried to steal him from us, but they were unsuccessful.
What's the furthest away that the Violators ever played?
Boy, I don't think we made it out of New Jersey or New York. I mean,
nope. New Jersey and New York.
I think we had a show down. What was that club down by Philly? City Gardens.
City Gardens in Trenton.
Yeah, mm-hmm. before it was City Gardens.
Too far away.
We were going to play, but then the club shut down, and then it turned into City Garden, so we never did play down there.
Mm-hmm.
We had some shows lined up in Frisco, but we never played them. We were supposed to play with Flipper.
Well, and what happened?
Some people could not leave the New York area.
That's right. Going after
their parole officers.
All right. All right. Okay.
Or other stuff.
I catch your drift. Mm-hmm. And
you got a lot to answer, Steve.
It's my fault.
We're all to blame.
Well, we're not here to just point fingers at Steve. I mean, actually, you know.
Yes, they are.
And you're still here. Exactly. I do understand.
Yes, a lot of my friends are not here.
Yeah, and I did want to just ask you about the people who had been in the band who may or may not be around. Where are they?
Well, Mike, the lead singer, unfortunately, he died from drug-related causes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that pretty much, you know.
And then who's going to be singing now?
That would be Kevin.
Sorry.
And then the other Steve Dornich, I think from what I hear through the grapevine, I spoke to him about 2 years ago or so, or it might have been longer than that. But he had some serious health issues, so mm-hmm. he's kind of you know, taking it easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's great that you guys are doing what you're doing, and it's, you know...
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It's a large block of time since that first 7-inch came out, and playing at the Bowery Electric tomorrow, that's, you know, really... It is exciting. And just
it is.
In terms of, you know... people who just sit in the, like, oh, well, I did this and I did that. But it's really cool for you to choose to just get back together. And you're like, we don't know why we did it. Yeah. And we don't even know
just
who's going
to
come.
Just for fun. That's the best reason to do it.
Yeah,
and,
for fun.
I guarantee it is going to be fun.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. And I love the spirit of fun. And you guys have been a lot of fun being here. And
I had a lot of fun being here.
and the music is... It's not secondary, but you've created a connection here with it, and it's super. I'm glad that you guys are here. What's your what's the next thing that we're going to hear from the Violators guest set?
Let's see. Let's peruse the guest set.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go with Iggy Pop, Search and Destroy.
All right.
On WFMU.
Very good. Now, I'm liking
the
way you
said.
Yeah, you certainly are.
All right.
Stay tuned. Some Search and Destroy.
Searching to destroy. And honey, I'm the world's forgotten boy.
Alrighty. A little bit of Johnny Thunders there. Iggy and the Stooges. I know why you played them all. And,
it's obvious.
And the first time. Well, you know, technically, yeah, it's obvious. And there's listeners that might be a different age group. Like, what was it like for you the first time you heard Search and Destroy? Was it a life changing piece of music?
It was really the first Dolls album was a life-changing experience when you hear it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just something just went off in my head and said, this is rock and roll. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. I've been searching for it all, you know, mm-hmm. through all these other bands, but this is the path I need to go down.
Kind of like the center of the universe thing at Max's.
Right. And, you know, when you hear those raw chords getting slammed out, and it just does something to you, you know. Like, mm-hmm. I was, you know, trying to be like every other guitar player, you know, playing as many notes as I could and trying to, you know. And then I came to a realization that if it doesn't come out of me naturally, I shouldn't be playing it. If I have to study something for a month to... No. If it doesn't just flow out of me, then I shouldn't be playing it. And that's the way I went with my guitar playing from then on in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Up to this day.
Now, for me, Raw Power, that's probably my Desert Island album. I can only have one album, that would be it. It has everything on it. It has every song that you can imagine is on that.
But explain how you explained it to me when I was a little kid.
Well, how was that?
When I was a little kid, James said, well, first he hands me the record, and I saw Iggy Pop, and I said, I want to be that. He's wearing the silver lame pants, and he's skinny with his silver hair. But now James, he said, Norton, listen to this record. If you listen to nothing but this record for a week, and then you go listen to anything else, it all sounds wrong.
Yes.
That's great.
And my story about the Dolls is my older brother was putting a band together, and the bass player in his band loved the Dolls. And then I started listening to it, and I was like, Jet Boy, I was like, wow, that's a cool song. And I was starting to like him. It freaked my older brother out because, you know, you look at the dolls, or, you know, look doing the drag queens, or they're gay, whatever. You know, we're talking about 14-year-old kids here, and he was immediately, you're not allowed to listen to that. So, you know, but when I heard it, I liked it, and the more I heard it, the more I loved it. And then in the future, when I got into Violators, I actually got into the dolls via the So Alone album. And also the Heartbreakers live at Max's Kansas City. And then I went out and bought the two Dolls albums.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a different period of time then, and that's why I wanted to know about your recollections then, especially when the music is coming out, because it's different to sort of hear things, you know, after hearing whatever music, you know, has gone by, and like, oh, you have to listen to New York Dolls. And if you turn somebody onto the New York Dolls today, they would have a different reaction than in hearing them in real time with, you know, all that's in the background is like classic rock or, you know, whatever. Right. And those are the experiences that really make us and really sort of, you know, have us point to something that's important to us. And I don't want that to be lost because, you know, you're like, oh, well, yeah, of course, everybody liked that song. And there's a reason, and there's a certain, you know, rawness or whatever it is for you and for you and for you, you know, in that music. But it was a different time.
Right. But I have a 24-year-old son, Damien, and he loves the Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's organic when you hear it. If you're into music, he has a band, the Coffin Stuffers, and he plays the guitar. And as soon as he heard the Dolls, he fell in love with them as well. And, you know, and all of these, you know, Iggy Pop and...
Does he ask you for stories, like, about being there?
Now
the
I'm old, you know. He,
well, yeah, but who else is he going to get a story
so,
from?
You know, he looks
from?
At me like...
Well, there is a thing where kids don't
he's
think
cooler
their parents
than me.
Are cool, yeah. Right.
But, you know, it's just... It's an organic thing. When you hear them, you have to like them, or else there's something wrong.
There's something wrong with you.
Well, it was a great period of time, and
yes,
I want to thank
was.
You for coming here to talk about that, and then now you're playing tomorrow at the Bowery Electric.
Yes, and so come down. You're going to have a good time, and I had a great time here today, Diane.
Well,
great.
Thanks for coming.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And the Sharp Lads and Outer National will be opening the show. You said you're probably going to be going on around 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
I think the address of Bowery Electric is 327 Bowery, and
yes,
you can
it
find
is.
It. In New York, and I see the website guy's posture is ready. Tommy's like ready. It's like
www.violators.us and www.dragstripband.com.
And I did want to just ask because we didn't sort of complete the cycle of what's going on with Dragstrip.
We're just finishing a new record. We're starting a new record,
which we're actually going to start probably within the next month or so.
Okay.
We've been writing for the last year, me and Tommy and. Mm-hmm. Kevin, and we're just gearing up, ready to start, and that's basically the story. You know?
So you guys are busy. So you're doing this,
yeah,
and then you're gonna just crack the whip and get that done.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's a labor of love. So
all music, all the time.
Yeah, I just came back from LA. I went out there to hang with these guys and rehearse. It was a lot of fun. It's really nice in LA. I'm telling you, it's a lot different than here. Great bunch of guys. They treated me really good. They introduced me to all their friends out there. It was fun.
I can tell you are a great bunch of guys, and thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
So we're going to go out with My Country, which is the that's the B-side, right?
Yes.
Of quote, the 45, Jim, Gary, Tommy, Kevin, and Steven. Thank you very much for being here.
Cheers.
And some Violators. And that wraps it up for today's podcast. Thank you to Lita Martinez for editing the podcast and to Liz Berg for all the other background work. We are WFMU.